All right, strap in, everybody, because today we are going deep on a topic that hits close to home for a lot of us, policing in America. And I'm not talking about just skimming the surface. We're going deep, exploring some radical ideas about how things could be done differently.
What's really interesting is we're using this collection of free ebooks curated by Tom Woods as our launch pad.
Tom Woods, that's right.
Yeah, he's a prominent libertarian thinker. You know, always challenging conventional wisdom.
Always shaking things up.
Exactly. And he really doesn't hold back when it comes to law enforcement.
So this is like a think and act locally exploration, especially relevant after everything that's happened, like the George Floyd protests.
Absolutely. It feels like everyone's been forced to re-examine the role of police in society.
Yeah, for sure.
And Woods is putting forward some seriously alternative approaches, like separating police and state, rethinking how we deal with victimless crimes, even looking into private security options.
Okay, I am definitely intrigued. Let's dive in. Where do we begin?
Well, chapter one introduces us to Dale Brown, the founder of the Detroit Threat Management Center. He's doing some amazing work in, well, one of the toughest cities in America.
Yeah, Detroit.
That definitely grabs my attention.
So what's Brown's approach?
Nonviolent dispute resolution, and it's been incredibly effective.
Okay.
But here's the really interesting part. Brown's argument is that arrests aren't the solution. Prevention is key.
Prevention. So how does that actually work?
His team uses a system they call Standing, Deter, Detect, Defend. They're proactively finding and de-escalating threats before they even turn violent.
Wow, so it's really proactive.
Yeah.
Is it mainly about community outreach then?
It goes way beyond that. They use psychology to deter criminals. Sometimes they even go undercover as drug dealers to disrupt gangs.
Wait, hold on. Undercover as drug dealers?
Yeah. It's not your average security company.
No, not at all. That's wild. But it sounds like it's working. So what's the takeaway for our listeners here?
Brown's work challenges that whole idea that police have a monopoly on force. He's showing that people can protect themselves and their communities legally and effectively.
That's pretty empowering, right? It makes you think about how we all play a role in keeping our communities safe. Not just relying on the police, but taking action ourselves.
Exactly. That's a central theme throughout these books.
Okay. I'm starting to see how think and act locally plays into all of this.
Yeah.
So what other alternative approaches does Woods highlight?
Well, in chapter two, we get into the world of private policing with economist Bruce Benson.
Private policing?
Yeah.
That's a pretty bold idea.
It is. But he makes a strong case that the free market can handle law enforcement better and more fairly than the government.
Okay, I'm listening. How does he back that up?
He challenges that whole assumption that law enforcement is this public good that only the government can provide.
Okay.
He points to historical examples of successful private policing and highlights some serious flaws in the current system.
Like what? What kind of flaws?
Well, he brings up how early police forces in America were often corrupt,
yeah,
used for political agendas.
You know, now that he mentions it, you kind of wonder if some things haven't really changed all that much.
Right. And Benson also points out how private security firms are held accountable in ways that government police often aren't.
How so?
They face lawsuits. They have to keep their clients happy to stay in business.
That's a good point. If you're paying for a service, you expect results.
Well, exactly.
And if you're not satisfied, you can go somewhere else.
Yeah.
That kind of accountability is just missing with traditional policing.
Absolutely. And Benson doesn't stop there.
Okay.
He advocates for a system focused on victim justice and making things right. You know, restitution rather than just punishment.
Yeah.
He says private companies are more incentivized to actually make their clients whole.
That's very different than the justice system we have now. It makes you think about what the purpose of law enforcement really is.
Yeah.
Is it about punishing people who break the rules?
Right.
Or is it about making things right for the victims?
It's a really important question. And Benson, along with Woods, wants us to challenge our assumptions about what justice actually means and how to achieve it. It's a fundamental shift in perspective.
It definitely is.
And that's really what these ebooks are all about, getting us to think differently about safety and security.
Yeah, it definitely challenges the way things are. But that's kind of the point of these ebooks, right? Pushing us to think outside the box about how we approach safety and security.
Okay, so we've talked about prevention, private policing. What other radical ideas does Woods throw our way?
Well, things get a little darker in chapters 3 and 6.
Oh, okay.
We confront this issue of police militarization.
Uh-huh.
Will Grigg, the writer, paints a pretty chilling picture of how Police departments all over the country are basically amassing military-grade equipment. We're talking tanks, armored vehicles, even grenade launchers.
Hold on, grenade launchers. That sounds more like a war zone than, you know, Main Street.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah. Greg argues that this trend, along with this, like, warrior mindset that's being instilled in police training, is creating a dangerous environment for everyone.
Right.
And he dives into this really disturbing case in Deming, New Mexico, where a man was subjected to an invasive body cavity search after a routine traffic stop.
Wait, a body cavity search after a traffic stop?
Hard a traffic stop.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's outrageous. Grigg's point is that these kinds of abuses, as shocking as they are becoming more and more common.
Right.
And that's where John Whitehead, a constitutional lawyer, takes this argument even further. He wrote this book called Battlefield America, The War on the American People.
Battlefield America.
Yeah.
That title's pretty alarming.
It is. And his claim is that we're basically already living in a police state, you know, characterized by all the surveillance, police violence, and the erosion of our constitutional rights. He has this whole list of cases where average citizens were targeted by law enforcement for, like, minor things or even just expressing dissenting opinions.
So he's saying our freedoms are under attack by the very people who are supposed to be protecting them.
Exactly. It's a pretty heavy accusation.
It is.
But he backs it up with a lot of evidence, and he's calling on people to, you know, wake up and resist this threat to our liberties. It's a serious message.
It's easy to brush those concerns aside as, like, conspiracy theories or whatever.
Right.
But when you see these real-life examples, it's hard to ignore what's happening.
It's a trend. And Woods is not shying away from these tough conversations. He's bringing them to light.
Right.
He wants us to be aware, even if it's uncomfortable.
So if things are as bad as these authors are saying, what can we do about it? Is there any hope for change?
That's the big question. And that's where the whole think and act locally idea becomes even more important.
Okay.
Woods believes real change has to start at the local level.
Right.
He wants to give individuals and communities the power to find solutions that work for them, instead of waiting for the federal government to swoop in and fix everything.
Okay, I'm seeing the bigger picture here, but let's get back to the specific chapters for a minute. We've covered a lot, but I know there's more.
Absolutely. So in chapter 4, we've got Edward Stringham.
Right.
He's an economist, and he tackles this issue of police killings in America.
Yeah.
And he doesn't sugarcoat anything.
Yeah.
He straight up says our police kill at a far higher rate than in other developed countries.
That's a disturbing statistic for sure. What does he attribute that to?
Well, he questions the need for heavily armed police forces.
Okay.
He points out that countries with unarmed police actually have much lower rates of police violence.
Unarmed police? I mean, that's a pretty radical concept, at least in America.
It is a different way of thinking.
Yeah.
And Stringham, like the other authors we've talked about, advocates for going back to private policing as a solution.
Okay.
He thinks it would be more responsive to the needs of communities and less likely to use excessive force.
So we're back to private policing. It seems like that's a recurring theme in these books. But how realistic is that? Can you imagine a world where private companies are in charge of law enforcement?
I mean, it's a thought-provoking idea. And whether or not it's feasible is a whole other discussion.
Right.
But the point is that something needs to change. The current system clearly isn't working.
I agree. So that brings us to our last chapter for today, chapter 5. What's in store for us there?
All right, chapter 5. We dive into the fundamental problems with government policing from an economic perspective.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got economist Tate Fagley.
Okay.
He argues that government police just don't have the right incentives to be efficient. And that they're often more focused on bringing in money than actually keeping people safe.
That's a bold statement. What's his evidence for that?
Well, he points to how police unions often protect officers from accountability, making it almost impossible to fire bad cops.
Right.
And he talks about things like civil asset forfeiture, where police can take your property, even if you haven't been charged with a crime. Critics say this encourages police to focus on generating revenue instead of, you know, protecting citizens.
That's pretty concerning. So what's Fagley's solution?
He proposes a market-based system where individuals and communities could choose their own security providers and hold them accountable.
Okay.
He sees this as a way to break free from the limitations of the current system.
So he's basically arguing for a free market approach to law enforcement. That definitely seems to be a running theme throughout these books. It's clear that Woods and these authors he's chosen are advocating for a big shift in how we think about policing.
Absolutely. They're challenging us to consider alternatives, even if they seem radical at first, alternatives that could lead to a system that's more just and equitable for everybody.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground today. Nonviolent dispute resolution, private policing, police militarization, police brutality, and the economic factors driving law enforcement.
It's a lot to process.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to acknowledge that this is a really complex issue. There's no easy answers.
Mm.
But the first step is asking the right questions.
Exactly. And that's what these books are doing.
Right.
They're pushing us to think critically.
Challenging our assumptions.
And encouraging us to see things from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And Woods isn't just presenting these ideas in the abstract.
Right.
He's providing real-world examples of how these alternative approaches are actually working in some places.
Like Dale Brown's work in Detroit. It's inspiring to see people putting these ideas into action. Making a difference.
Yeah, it shows that change is possible.
Yeah.
It's not just some utopian dream.
So out of everything we've discussed, what stands out to you the most? What's your big takeaway from all this?
For me, it's this idea of individual empowerment. It keeps coming up.
Yeah.
You know, taking responsibility for our own safety, not just relying on some authority figure. It's about recognizing that we have the power to create the kind of communities we want to live in.
Yeah, that's a powerful message. And it connects perfectly with the think and act locally idea. It's about taking ownership, finding solutions that work for us, not waiting for someone else to fix things.
Exactly. And it's not about just complaining. It's about being part of the solution. It's about getting involved, supporting organizations that align with our values, and advocating for policies that promote individual liberty and responsible government.
So as we wrap up part two, I want to get your thoughts on something. One of the most thought-provoking questions Woods asks is, if we really value individual liberty and limited government, can we justify a system where one entity has a monopoly on force?
Wow, that's a deep one. It really makes you question the whole foundation of law enforcement as we know it. It makes you think about whether there could be other approaches, more decentralized, community-based approaches that prioritize individual rights and accountability.
And that brings us full circle to think and act locally.
Right. It all ties together. It's about recognizing that one-size-fits-all solutions don't work.
Right.
The best answers come from the people who are closest to the problem.
Exactly. And it's about empowering people and communities.
To take control.
Instead of relying on some distant bureaucracy. So as we move into part three, I'm really curious to explore what specific actions we can take to put these ideas into practice.
Yeah.
We've talked big picture.
Right.
Now I want to know how we can make a real difference.
Let's get into it.
Okay. So we've spent the last two parts of this deep dive really getting into some radical ideas about policing in America. Now I want to talk about what we can do it. Like, what concrete steps can we take?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? And I think that's where it can feel overwhelming for a lot of people. But remember that think and act locally principle.
Right.
It's not just a slogan. It's a way forward.
Okay, so how do we actually put that into action? Like, where do we even begin?
Well, one of the ideas that kept coming up in these books is community policing, but not the way it's usually talked about.
Right, not just more cops walking around the neighborhood.
Exactly. It's about empowering communities to be a part of keeping themselves safe, not just relying on law enforcement.
Right, like Dale Brown's work in Detroit.
Exactly, the Detroit Threat Management Center.
They were teaching residents how to spot trouble before it even started.
Right.
It was about preventing things, getting the community involved, not just calling the cops after something bad happened.
Exactly. It's about building that trust, recognizing that everyone has a role to play in keeping things safe.
So besides getting more involved in our communities, what other practical steps can we take?
Another interesting idea from the books is shifting the focus from punishment to actually making things right.
Right.
Instead of just throwing people in jail, what if we focused on making the victims whole?
Like restitution.
Yes, exactly. Right. And helping offenders get back on track.
I remember Bruce Benson, the economist, was really into that.
He was.
It does feel like a more humane approach.
It is, and more practical in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
He argues that a system based on restitution would actually make victims more likely to come forward, and it would give offenders a real chance to take responsibility.
It's definitely an interesting concept, and it fits with that whole libertarian philosophy that runs through these books.
Right.
Individual responsibility, less government intervention.
Exactly. It's about addressing the root causes of crime, trying to create a more just and compassionate system.
Okay, so we've got community policing, we've got restorative justice. What about technology? We can't ignore that.
That's a big one. It's playing a huge role in law enforcement these days. But it's a double-edged sword, right?
Absolutely.
It can be great for preventing and solving crimes, surveillance cameras, facial recognition, all that stuff.
But it can also be misused to take away our privacy. I mean, we've already seen facial recognition being used to target certain groups.
It's a valid concern.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get more complicated as technology keeps advancing.
Yeah.
We need to be really careful about how we use these tools.
We need to find that balance between safety and freedom.
Mm.
And it goes back to that personal responsibility thing.
Yeah.
We can't just expect the government or technology to keep us safe. We have to be informed, aware, and ready to stand up for our rights.
Absolutely. So what can we actually do, practically speaking? What are some actions we can take?
Well, we can start by educating ourselves, learn about our rights, the laws in our communities.
Yeah.
We can support organizations that are fighting for police reform and accountability.
Definitely.
And let's not forget about local politics. Yeah. We can get involved, support policies that prioritize community safety and individual liberty, hold our elected officials accountable. It might seem like a small thing, but those local actions can really make a difference.
Absolutely. It all comes back to think and act locally. It's not just about reading books. It's about putting these ideas into practice.
Starting in our own backyards.
Exactly. And, you know, these books, they're free. Anyone with internet access can read them. So we can spread these ideas, start conversations with our friends and neighbors, raise awareness.
We're not powerless.
No.
We have the power to make change happen. That's a really empowering thought. This whole deep dive has been eye-opening. We started with some pretty radical ideas.
We did.
But I think we've ended up in a place of hope.
I agree. We've explored different ways to approach safety and security. We've talked about the importance of individual liberty, giving power back to community.
And the need for a more just system.
Absolutely. And we've been challenged to take action, think, and act locally. Be the change we want to see.
So here's a final thought for everyone listening. What if, instead of asking who will protect us, we start asking, how can we protect ourselves and each other?
Ooh, I like that. It's a small shift in perspective, but it could make a world of difference.
It's about taking ownership, creating a world where safety and freedom go hand in hand. That's a powerful image to leave our listeners with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it's inspired you to think critically, ask the tough questions, and get involved in building the kind of world you want to live in.